Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. Now let's get started.
Danielle Quill has a background as a pharmacist, is an incredibly talented musician, and happens to live with myasthenia gravis. As her condition progressed, she had to leave her job as a pharmacist, but she became determined to share music with the world. Lacking the stamina to play long sessions, she taught herself to record her songs, coaxing her muscles and voice to sustain long enough to lay down one sound bite at a time, which is so impressive. One of her recent videos got over 16,000 views on TikTok, but the proudest moment for Danielle was knowing it resulted in the search for happy things to cheer you up, which I can't read that out loud without it making me smile. I love it. And I've got to say that when I first saw you on video, it immediately brought a smile to my face. You just emit such joy. So let's jump right in. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start out by talking a little bit about what may be the least interesting thing about you, myasthenia gravis. So first, we've got lots of other things to talk about, but let's dive into that just a little bit. First of all, how old were you when you were diagnosed?
Well, I don't want to give away my age.
Of course, no. Adult, child, that's fine.
But I was an adult. I think people will be able to figure out, you know, how old I was, because I was already well into my 5 years into my pharmacist career. So that doesn't happen overnight.
Okay. Well, honestly, I am looking right at you and you look like you're 21 years old. So
thank you.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about, I know just from reading a little bit about you that it was a bit of a challenge to get that diagnosis, which I think is so common in the neuromuscular world. When people with these conditions are trying to get diagnoses for, you know, both myasthenia gravis, but, you know, things like ALS and so many other conditions that fall under this umbrella. Tell me maybe a little bit first about what that diagnostic journey looked like for you and how long it took to get a diagnosis. And then I just want to delve into a little bit how it impacts your daily life. So let's start with the diagnosis itself.
Right. It's so difficult because at first you have to realize and come to terms with yourself that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And then going to the doctors, they're like, oh, you don't want there to be something wrong with you. Like you like are seeking for there to be something wrong. Mm-hmm. And this is after a few years of struggling with like, ooh, I think this is more than I initially thought it was. I can't even put my finger on a day or time when it just was like something happened and all of a sudden I had myasthenia. It was like I was working and I stopped taking the elevator, because when the elevators would stop, I would feel like I was still bouncing up and down. And my migraines kind of changed to where I felt like I'd have a headache, but I'd have a migraine, but no headache. And instead it was just my eyes were blurry and I didn't know how else to describe it. They were the words and things were blurred.
Yeah.
And then once I stopped taking the elevators, I realized, oh, I am way out of shape. I can't even climb the stairs. So I started like really trying to climb the stairs multiple times a day. And instead of getting stronger and that getting easier, it kept getting harder and harder. Mm-hmm. And so then I was like, oh, I need to go jogging. And around that time, I moved from the Central Valley to the Bay Area in California. And at one point, I couldn't even jog. So I just was walking. And when I got back from my walk, I all of a sudden felt like I was so light that I was struggling to stay on my tiptoes. And then my muscles were twitching all up and down my legs. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized for me, oh, it's a neurological thing.
Yeah.
And I was so scared because, I mean, as a pharmacist, you know, I knew it was something neurological. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you do that Google search and it's like ALS was the first thing that popped up. And I was like, oh, I don't want to go to the doctor. But I forced myself to. And then they're like, oh, it could be an inner ear problem. And I'm like, it could.
Yes.
I don't think it is. I think it's something much more serious. Mm-hmm. And from the time that I had that first inkling of what it might be, I think it was like 2 or 3 years to get a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't take it serious trying to get a diagnosis until I fell on Halloween. And then I fell a little bit later at work and I couldn't get up and they took me to the ER. Mm-hmm. And made an appointment with a neurologist like the following Monday. And he said, oh, it seems like you have all the symptoms of myasthenia gravis. Take these pills. And he gave me some Mestinon. And he says, then we'll wait to have you be seen by the neuromuscular specialist. Well, I took the pills. After a few days, I could walk. He had taken some labs, but the labs came back negative.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. So he says, well, now we don't know whether you would have gotten better on your own or if the pills had anything to do with it. And then they started treating me with a lot of suspicion, like,
wow, I just did what you told me to do.
Yeah. And I was like, but the pills are working. Can I have more?
Yeah.
You know? And they're like, no, you don't have myasthenia because it didn't show up in your labs. And then the neuromuscular specialist, they just started doing tests and more tests and more tests. And they were like, it's not myasthenia because, and then they started saying like, well, we have to consider that it could all be in your head. And I was like, I did my research. I researched like everything. I learned about so many different neuromuscular diseases, like stiff person syndrome. I asked to see, I get a second opinion from so many. I saw 6 different neurologists.
Wow.
And some of them I paid for out of pocket. I was struggling at work the whole time. I was like having trouble breathing, going to the ER, like crawling under my desk to just take a break sometimes.
Oh my
because
gosh.
I, you know, my whole job was just sort of talking on the phone to doctors and nurses, and sometimes I couldn't even hold my head up to do that.
Ugh.
It was an incredibly difficult time. And then everyone was like, oh, you're stressing out too much, it's just you just can't handle the pressure. And I'm like, no, excuse you, I've been doing this for a while.
Exactly.
Now, like, I was up for promotion. I was really trying to, you know, I was like, no, I'm happy. I'm like, this is, I am doing what I want to be doing. And it was kind of torture to be told this is all in your mind because I was like, well, then poof, be gone. You know?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I can't imagine how frustrating that would be. And I say to people sometimes who I talk to that are in this situation and they're trying to get answers, it's like, you don't, kind of like you said earlier, you don't want there to be something wrong, but you want an explanation, you want answers. Right. And hearing that you were made to question yourself just angers me on your behalf.
Thank you. You know? Yeah, it's like medical gaslighting. It's...
Yes, yeah.
And my aunt had myasthenia gravis. Mm. And so I told them, you know, you're like, I looked up the research, you're like 1,000 times more likely to have it if you have a first degree relative that does. Uh-huh. And they're like,
oh no.
So finally I got to see the I call them like the Uber specialist, like,
yeah,
the guy, the neurologist who only does myasthenia gravis.
Oh, wow.
In San Francisco. And he had already diagnosed me before I even got there. He had looked at my chart and he said, yeah, I had said to my colleague, look at this poor girl, like, look what they're putting her through.
Yeah.
And so he started to treat me, and, you know, I got my diagnosis that day. It was 2017. It was weird because it was like, okay, now I have the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking about next steps. It was like, okay, now what?
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be all good, but it was supposed to be easy to treat, and here we go. Mm-hmm. But then it turned out that I had, because I'm seronegative, meaning I don't have like the 3 or 4 antibodies that they know of, my myasthenia is a little bit different.
Is that why it didn't show up in the blood test?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and they act like there's something wrong with me, which I hate, like, patient shaming in the medical field, where it's like, there's something wrong with you. No, it's just that, you know, we know so much about so much. We know what we know in the medical field, but there's still things we don't know. Believe it or not, there's still 10% of people with myasthenia gravis who we don't know what antibodies they have. We know they have antibodies, and they call it like myasthenic syndrome because we're not quite sure what the antibodies they have are doing. But they're still attacking the junction between the nerve and the muscle.
Okay.
And those antibodies might be affecting the body a little differently than the acetylcholine receptor antibody or the MuSK antibodies might. So they're a little bit harder to get rid of.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So there's so many questions that I want to ask you. For anyone listening who isn't familiar with myasthenia gravis, how, and yours, you know, given the antibodies that you have or don't have, or, you know, the classification that it falls into, how does myasthenia gravis present, or does it vary according to the classification that you have?
Yeah, it varies. It usually presents as double vision.
Okay.
So people will complain about their eyes and about seeing double. That's like the most typical presentation.
Kind of the hallmark.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So, and then, you know, they've got a breakdown of percentages. You know, some people will present with having difficulty swallowing or speaking. And then the numbers go down from there for, you know, difficulty with arms or difficulty with legs is like a very small person and people will present with that. So I didn't even present the right way.
Right. You know? Oh, bless your heart.
Most people will have like double vision and droopy eyelids. Uh-huh. And some people will stay that way. It's just the ocular myasthenia gravis where it only affects their eyes.
Huh.
But
okay.
For other people, it will progress to be generalized myasthenia gravis where it affects their whole body.
Gotcha. How does it affect you, if you don't mind my asking, in your daily life? I know that, for example, you had to stop working as a pharmacist. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it affects you physically?
Yeah. It's since it is an autoimmune disease as well as a neuromuscular disease, and being a nerve disease, it just responds to a lot of different factors, like stress. So it does respond to stress, heat, because nerves don't like the heat or the cold. Yeah. Some people complain more about the cold. If you're under a lot of, if you're in like a really stressful situation, or you're not getting enough sleep, it can cause exacerbations.
Yeah.
And an exacerbation is just, you know, when the goal of treatment of myasthenia gravis is to get you stable or to put it into remission, where you basically don't have symptoms and you can live your life day to day without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
But mine was a bit refractory, meaning I wasn't responding to treatment. I was taking these medications and still having a lot of symptoms on a daily basis and having exacerbations even in between that. And then the scariest thing is having a crisis, because myasthenia affects every muscle that is a voluntary muscle. It's not so much the automatic muscles, but muscles that you control with your mind, right? But those also include the muscles of breathing, because we control taking a breath.
Right.
So an exacerbation would be like your diaphragm or your other muscles of breathing just shutting down on you, and suddenly you can't breathe. And I did have one or two of those, and that was really scary.
Yeah,
and it happened, you know, when I was trying to work, and it just, there was too much in my life going on in addition to work, and it was like, something's got to give.
Right.
And every time I'd try to go back to work, I would have to step out again on be hospitalized again or go on a medical leave again. And then I think the final straw was that it very rarely happens, but sometimes where along with the myasthenia, I also got dysautonomia. Which is, in addition to the muscles that we control, then it also affects the muscles that just automatically roll on their own.
Oh, wow.
So it affected my digestion and my heart rate. So I was like fainting and couldn't eat. And that is still going on. So it's like, okay, just... I got a whole bunch of stuff going on. I had to have like a feeding tube and or be on TPN.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing. I know it's hard to talk about these things, but I appreciate your candor and your transparency. I know it's gonna be helpful to people who are listening, and, you know, may be able to relate to your story. So, you know, I'm sure that you were a brilliant pharmacist. However, I kind of wonder, you know, the way my mind works and where I tend to go in my mind with stories like this is, I think you had another calling. And I feel like maybe that was music. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, I'd love to shift a little bit, you know, and you shared, I mentioned it in the opening, that as things progressed, working on music helped you through things like long hours of infusions and hospital stays. Can you talk a little bit more about that and sort of the journey from, you know, through the MG diagnosis and treatments to sort of coming into your own with music and learning to use that as a tool and ultimately it sounds like kind of to replace your pharmacy career?
Yeah, I've always had music or done music, played music.
Is that right? I was curious, actually.
Yeah, I fell in love with guitar when I was just really small. I don't know, we went to visit a family friend and he had a guitar. I just remember this old man and he had this instrument and it was a guitar and he was playing it and I just fell in love with it. Aww. And I told my parents, I want one of those. And they were like, oh, you know, it's kind of expensive because we were all really young back then. And but they did get me one and aww. I just was determined to learn and, you know, they got me lessons and I just always had the guitar with me, you know, growing through high school and college and life. And
were you always a singer or was it guitar that you spent your time on?
I don't even consider myself a singer.
Oh, I beg to differ. You are definitely a singer.
Yeah, in elementary school, they used to teach music. They yes. had a music class. Mm-hmm. And that's where I learned to sing. That's where our teacher taught us, you know, to breathe properly and to count beats. And and I learned a lot of music theory through guitar lessons. And so when I stopped working, I was lost. I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And whenever I'm that way, it's like I cling to my guitar like a life raft, but I didn't like the way playing it felt at first because I could feel the weakness in my fingers and it made me slower at it, not as fast, not as good. And even sometimes when I was really weak, I was like shaky and it really bothered me. But one night I just woke up in the middle of the night, or I wasn't quite asleep and I was just thinking about life and, you know, wondering like if this was it, you know, my career is over like a lot faster than I thought. Yeah. And what if life is over a lot faster than I thought? Like, would I be satisfied with what I've done this far? And I was like, what about my music though? Like, what if no one ever gets to hear the songs that I wrote? Because I had written quite a few songs in college and after college and always meant to record them and never did. And I was like, I don't know. It just bugged me. I got up out of bed right then. It was like midnight. And I went and I copyrighted. I like went and found out how to copyright the song right then and there. And then I was like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to at least record the song so that I can copyright it. And I did literally play one chord and recorded it at a time. Wow. And just spliced the chord together.
That's to amazing. Build the song. Wow. That's incredible.
It sure kept me busy.
The patience that would take. I mean, I'm so impressed.
I had a lot of time.
Well, I shared with you and when I asked you to be on the podcast that I used to be a singer, and I don't know that I would have had it in me to painstakingly record, you know, one note, one chord at a time. And so I love, number one, I love that you were capable of that, but I also love that I think that speaks a lot to how much it meant to you.
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was determined.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. So so now you have songs that you've released and are out in the wild, so to speak, for people to listen to. Tell me about the songs that you've created so far and where people can listen to them. And by the way, we're going to put all the information in the show notes so that people can find them after the fact.
Great, thanks. Yes, I've released 4 singles so far.
Uh-huh.
They're actually going to be together in an album eventually.
Mm. Love it.
I have I'm out on social media, so I'm on Instagram, Facebook, what's that? TikTok, all of the places as Danny A. Quill. And all of the songs can be downloaded wherever you stream music.
Great.
I also have a store on Bandcamp where you can purchase the music and like the money will go directly to me, as well as my brand new website, which is just DannyAQuill.com.
Uh-huh.
And you can purchase the music there too as well.
Wonderful. Now, do you focus mainly on recording music or do you perform live?
I have not gotten into performing live yet. It's very physically taxing.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I've gotten better. I mean, I've gotten stronger and I've gotten on a different, you know, different medication regimes where I am able to play a whole song and, you know, sing a whole song.
Uh-huh.
And I use a lot of like tricks to help me,
uh-huh.
Like holding my hands above my head to help me breathe.
Oh, interesting. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I use, I am in my recording booth right now, but I use like straps
that are,
they're just strung above my head so that I can rest.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
Yeah, so that I open up my wind cage. Something that my neurologist told me about when I was having a hard time breathing one day. Uh-huh. And then I even have like a little device that's like a exercise for the respiratory muscles.
Yeah.
That's been helping a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I record in layers. So I'll record one guitar part and then go back, record another layer of guitar over that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll go back and record like ukulele or harp over and then keys and put them all together.
And I've listened to some of your music. It's beautiful. It's fun. It's beautiful. You have a gorgeous voice. And you know, you've got, you know, harmonies and things worked into your songs. Do you sing all your harmonies and everything? Wow. That's really, I can't imagine with everything you just described, how long did it take to maybe record, and it may vary from song to song, but how much time have you spent recording a song from start to finish?
I think from the time that I purchased my first piece of equipment that would allow me to start recording, I think it's been 5 years.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, but it's,
that's dedication.
there was a lot for me to learn, because I didn't want to just, I didn't have the money to just go into a, a recording booth and a recording studio and be like, oh, I'll pay the time. So I build my own recording booth at home. And then I didn't want to pay a producer to mix and master the songs.
Right.
So I kind of learned how to do a serviceable job at that myself.
Yeah. And, that's fantastic.
And as I go, the process has become a lot quicker. So now I'm moving pretty quickly and putting the songs out there now that I've got all of the equipment that I need and all of the knowledge that I need. So I think this last song, it was only a month to get the song together.
And that's still significant, but it's absolutely quicker than 5 years.
Right.
and it shows in your music. It's so well done. Now I understand that you're also working with a partner on a song specifically for MG. Is it Awareness Month that you're creating that for? Tell me a little bit about this other person you're working with and about that project.
It's actually, it's still my song that I wrote, and I invited several other people to sing and play on the piece with me. Mm. Kind of got tired of my own voice. But,
well, I think as a singer, you appreciate other amazing voices.
Yes.
Because you know what goes into the craft.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And the song is not specifically about myasthenia gravis, but that is the lens that I am seeing through. But I know that it is a very common thing and theme for people to feel invisible. I even thought about, I was listening to the April episode that you interviewed Jess, I think his name
Jess
is.
Westman, yeah.
Yes. And he was telling a story about him on the metro and how people were telling him to move because he's not disabled. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, see, there goes another example. The song is called Invisible People.
Okay.
That
gave me goosebumps.
And it's about having an invisible illness. And the kind of effect that has, and that I've seen people struggling with it. And we were lucky enough to get a sponsor in MG Holistic, and I've been working with Dawn through MG Holistic. She is just amazingly been like, I believe in your project. So like I said, she's put her money behind her words, and that's
amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Yeah.
So the song is sung by Amy Zahner, who is another young person that has MG. And the piano is played by Mika Philborn, who is another artist. He is also amazing, who also is living with MG.
Oh, okay.
In Denmark. So
fantastic.
That's why I wanted it to be like a group of people that are experiencing this.
I love that. I absolutely love that. When is it going to be available? Did you tell me June?
In June.
Okay.
Hopefully early June.
Okay.
I don't have an exact date, but hopefully early June it should be out, and it should be just like the other songs, available.
Same places.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Everywhere. Oh, I can't wait to hear the finished product. It sounds beautiful, and it sounds so important because there are so many people in this world who have, you know, invisible disabilities, and you know, that's a whole different unique set of struggles and things that you come up against in your life. And so I love that you're acknowledging that and giving time and space to it. I think even beyond the MG community, I think it'll speak to a lot of people.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So tell me, just in general, your thoughts on, clearly you're out here raising awareness for MG. Tell me about why that's important to you, and how you hope your music will do that.
Well, because I don't think that anyone should ever have to go through what I did to get diagnosed. It is traumatizing, it's damaging.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it happens way too much to young women, and myasthenia is bimodal when it comes to the incidence of diagnosis. So it first shows up in young women of childbearing age, and it again in older men. And unfortunately, there's a lot of misogyny, and like you said, medical gaslighting, and just sexism in the world still. And so when a young woman shows up with a mysterious disease that, you know, maybe they covered one day in medical school because it's a rare disease, it's easier to tell her, oh, I'm sending you to the psychiatrist. And that's not right.
No, it's not. I mean, what would your... I mean, it's just, it breaks my heart hearing you talk about this, and knowing how many people are out there that this is happening to. If anyone's listening who feels like they are going through this right now, do you have like a best piece of advice for them, sort of looking back on your own journey and what you maybe wish somebody would have told you?
Yeah, just trust yourself and listen to your body.
Yeah.
And it's not worth fighting with the doctor about. Like, I thought I had to fight, like, deal with this doctor and make them understand me and make them hear me. But really, there are so many doctors out there. Just next.
Yeah, if you don't feel heard, absolutely.
Yeah. You don't have to deal with that doctor. You
so
can
true.
Ask for a second opinion and another opinion. You don't only get two. You can, I think it's misleading, like a second opinion, but like you can get a third and a fourth and a fifth. Like, you get to someone who will listen to you and take your concerns seriously.
Yeah. I love that. I absolutely love that. So let's finish on, you know, maybe a happier note of, you know, let's talk about also, you know, in this community, our neuromuscular community, there are so many people out there with incredibly valuable talents and gifts. What advice would you give to them about learning to share their gifts with the world and, you know, step into that kind of vulnerable, maybe a little bit scary place, and putting themselves out there.
Yeah, I think you just got to try it.
Yeah.
You know, where there's a will, there's a way. And yeah, these diseases, they suck. They take a lot out of you.
Yeah.
But that don't let them take your self-expression. Because there's so many different ways to do that and to experience the joy of that. Mm-hmm. And I think Amy had a really eye-opening experience with this, because she was like, she said she was in a bulbar crisis just week before she recorded the song. So mm-hmm. she was like trying to pump herself up on meds and get strong enough to sing, and she didn't tell me, because I would have said like, no, never mind, like it's not worth, you know, you stressing out about. But she really wanted to do it really bad, and once she had, she was just absolutely in love with it, and she was like, I want to do this more, like, this is one thing that I think has been missing from my life and I haven't been trying to do, because I, you know, you can talk your stuff out of stuff.
Yes. So easily.
Right? You know, it's, oh, I never, and they wouldn't put up with me how many breaks I need. And, but yeah, they would, if they're your people. And artists I have found to be some of the most kind-hearted and understanding people. Mm-hmm. And I just say go for it.
Yeah, I love it. And I'll just say what you said is absolutely perfect. And I want to add to that we are so much more than these conditions that we live with. And just like you said, if you love something, if you can't stop thinking about something, if it's your passion, you know, one step at a time, and just get out there and do it however you can, you know, like you did, one note, one chord at a time.
And it'll get easier. You've
made beautiful music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll get easier.
It does. It absolutely does. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your story with all of us. It was such a pleasure to get to know you, and I just look forward to hearing more music from you, and hopefully getting to stay in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm like, you're going to make me cry now. No.
happy tears. Thank you, Danye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content, and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.